G'day and welcome to the Australians Teach English podcast, the podcast by language learners, with language learners, for language learners. My name is Glenn and I'm the owner and director of the Australians Teach English Institute. And I have a Bonza episode for you today. A Bonza person is rejoining us. My favorite Seppo, now a Yankee. Well, he always was a Yankee. Yeah. Evan, hello, Evan.
How are you doing, Glenn?
I'm very well. I'm very well.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm well. It's a Bonza day out here today. We've got sunshine, a little bit of wind, but it's lovely, beautiful spring weather.
Right. Y'all are in spring. I keep forgetting. Yeah, we're entering fall. It's nice to be. As you said, I am now fully a Yankee. I'm in New York City, very different from Texas, where I was from.
And so you actually have fall in New York.
Yeah, we do. Which is very nice. I'd forgotten what it was like, to be quite honest with you.
Because in Texas, you don't have fall. You actually have autumn.
That's true. One could say that we don't have anything really besides summer, and then 2 weeks of winter, and then more summer.
So it's basically like most of Australia then, really.
Yeah.
So fall in Australia doesn't exist because we generally don't have deciduous trees. We're famous for having evergreen trees that are not coniferous. So a lot of the eucalypts, for example, that people will be familiar with from parks and gardens all around the world, they're actually Australian trees, and they don't drop their leaves. They might drop their branches. It's dangerous to sit under them in the parks, so don't do that. But
they combust as well. Are those
they're very trees? Yeah. The eucalyptus oil is very combustible, so it will spontaneously combust at high temperatures. So this is a big problem with Australian fires, and now fires in certain parts of California and certain parts around the world where they have put eucalyptus plantations in. They thought there was going to be a bonanza for this bonanza with this fast growing tree species that they could then cultivate, but then they realize it's actually not when it starts to burn.
Came the fires.
Yeah, exactly. So you've been having a bonza time in New York. Tell us about what's happened with your life since we last spoke to you.
It's been a grand bonza indeed. I'm currently in New York pursuing a graduate degree at the Columbia School of Journalism. So I have an enjoyable time. It's nice to be in a big city again, a big metroplex. My last experience was Buenos Aires, which is obviously a large city. In my opinion, it does not compare to New York in any way. New York is massive, and obviously there are cities much larger than New York as well, but New York is just as far as I've seen, just a behemoth, just a ungodly, just massive undertaking of a city that is very interesting, very rich in culture and languages and people, so international. I mean, it's nice to be in a city where there's so many different types of cultures and foods and music and again, languages just being spoken in the street, which I feel is like something that I never really experienced in Buenos Aires. Buenos Aires, obviously there are international communities there, but I feel like they were restricted more to Latin America and maybe some from the US, obviously the us Seppos roaming the streets in our packs and our wild packs. I just feel like you don't really see a lot of, at least in my experience, you never really saw a lot of African people unless they were, you know, unfortunately the people who were pretty much relegated to selling things on the street. You didn't see a lot of Asian people. You didn't see a lot of people from Southeast Asia, Indians and Pakistanis and whatnot. So it's been a very rich experience.
So you've come to a city like New York, which is famous for sort of being the capital of worldwide culture, basically, and it's fantastic that you are there now, because that's kind of what I actually want to talk about with our word today, bonza. I think in our last episode, Seppo, we were talking about the slang from the Western United States that had came to be used or has come to be used in Australia. And bonza is is one of these words. And we were talking about this before the show. When you think of this word, and I spoke about the original word, where it came from, bonanza, what was your immediate thought when I said bonanza? So there was this old television show called Bonanza, which was about what? What was it about?
It was a Western. It was like, I believe it was like Pioneers, what's the covered wagons, and there were Native American interactions, just an old Western. Man, what's going on? Let me sit up. I assume you can cut that out. You can edit that out.
Yeah. So I think sitting down on the pillow is probably the thing that's doing it.
Yeah, probably. I'll get my lazy ass up. So.
Yeah, I think sitting up might be the key.
So, okay. So where should I start?
So again? I'll come back into it. So basically, this was a Western where people were going to the Wild West looking for gold and all of this sort of stuff. And of course there were clashes with Indians and also Mexicans. Mm. And you come from that great Mexican state of Texas, is that correct?
Indeed, I do, yeah. Formerly Mexican land.
Exactly.
We don't have to go on that tangent. That's the
point. So is Texas actually a Mexican word or a Spanish word?
They called it Tejas, yeah, Tejas.
Well, there you go.
The word itself, Tejas, means shingles, right? I don't know. I don't necessarily know that that's has any relation to the name of the province, the state, but it is a word in Spanish. Tejas.
Yeah. Meaning the disease shingles.
No, the roofing. Oh.
See, in Australia, we don't have shingles. We have tiles. If you say shingles in Australia, we're talking about that's the disease.
Chicken pox for
the second time for adults,
yeah.
Which can be very deadly.
Right.
So that's what we would assume. I think Texas with that meaning is actually better. It's the disease.
Mm. Yes. Yes. I know, Glenn. I mean, we're a horrible. I know.
So, but bonanza is definite. Bonanza is definitely not an English word. It is. What kind of word, Evan?
A Spanish word.
It's a Spanish word. And what does it mean?
Well, in English, I know it means a large amount of something, right? That's the first we spoke about this before the episode. The first definition that comes to my mind is just a smorgasbord or something, right? Like a large amount of any given thing, right? Like bonanza of I don't know, of mate, right? Like, oh, I hit a bonanza here.
Gold, of money, oil, yeah, whatever it is.
Right. So it has that, but I think we saw that it also has that kind of, the definition can also be understood to have that unexpected quality, like a find, like it's a mother load that you hit and you hit a bonanza. Right.
Good. So like it's an excellent surprise, a positive surprise.
Right.
Perhaps.
Yeah. And no negative connotation at all.
No.
And it's
interesting that in Australia, we've taken this Mexican word from the United States and then changed it into Australian slang. So Evan knows very well that I like to shorten my words. It was one thing that confronted him when he first met me, and I taught him the correct English, the Australian English.
Yes.
And then we like to shorten things. So instead of service station, we will say servo. So instead of bonanza, we will say bonza. Mm. But it keeps its essential meaning. It is from the gold fields slang that we've spoken about before, that when there was a gold rush in the United States, a lot of Australian settlers went to the United States and then came back. And so this language actually came back into Australian language and changed. Mm. So even from the Spanish of the Spanish settlers in the North America, then it gets transformed into Australian slang. And so it's I find this really interesting, and especially that you are in New York, the melting pot of different cultures, of how language can actually do this, how we not just loan words, but borrow them and then change them, and then not even realize that that word was originally in another language. For example, Texas,
right,
or Florida,
right,
or California, or right, in Australia, we have the animal emu. These are not English words. They come from, right, they come from other languages, but we don't realize this. And so can you think of any other examples of where this might happen?
An example in English of a word that we've taken from another language. I should have done my homework before this recording.
Instead of going out drinking last night.
we've appropriated a lot of words. Like, there are words that we use all the time that are from, like, siesta, for example, mm-hmm, right? That we just use, as even though we have the word for nap, right? We have mm-hmm that word, but we use siesta.
Siesta now, yeah.
And it has a very specific connotation. I'm trying to think, I forget if we spoke about this in the other episode, but I can think of the reverse, how there are words that, especially thinking back to Argentine Spanish, that that they've incorporated from English, right? Words like living, right? Delivery, things like that. But I feel like they know that those are English. Everyone obviously knows that those are words from English, right?
There's probably an interesting word that I've noticed here recently since you've been gone. They have something called topitude.
What is that?
So it means it's tops.
Topitude.
Yeah.
I see.
It means it's tops.
Like the tops, like the best? Like,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it would. It's a very, very strange. Very strange word like this.
Yeah. That's interesting though. Tops, I understood what you meant, but I don't think I've heard anyone here say it's the tops, and it's not something I would say. But
I think we would use that in Australia, actually. Something is tops. In Australia.
Yep. Interesting.
Yeah, I think maybe it actually comes from British English. Like a lot of these words do, but Bonza is one where people think it is old English, comes from Britain, but it's not. It actually comes from Spanish and North America.
Yeah. It sounds like a Spanish word too.
Mm. Yeah. And then we have, like, in Australia, we have lots of different words, maybe more sort of famously for our animals, words like emu, which is an ostrich-like animal, is actually comes from Portuguese. People think it's an indigenous word, but it's not. It comes from Portuguese, an emu. And our famous cockatoos, again, like my friend Todd, our mascot, he's a cockatoo. But people think that is an Australian word, and it's not. It's actually a Malay word. So 200 years ago, they were stealing these birds and selling them to Europe. And where they were buying them was in Singapore. So the Singaporeans had their own name for this, and this is what they used as this word. So that came to be known as this. But then we have other words that are more commonly used in Australia that have a direct meaning from Indigenous language. So something like budju, you would hear that in the north of Australia, which means, well, it can be a rude word. It can be a rude word for a female part, but it also has, interestingly enough, it has a very positive connotation. So it would mean good or good looking. So my friend Evan is really budju.
Hey, what did you call him?
Beautiful, good looking.
I'm looking up some examples, doing my homework late. And there are loot, apparently. The word loot comes from Hindi, and it's pronounced and defined in the exact same way as right? Like, how would you define loot?
Why did it come from India?
Yeah, I wonder why. I wonder why.
Yeah, it wouldn't, have come from the English at all. They wouldn't have gone to India looting
stealing,
anything.
Who was stealing, yeah, goods and whatnot. Yeah, that's interesting. Interesting find.
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected loot to be a Hindi word at all.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, what else? Oh, massage. That's an interesting one. Massage, you know, because and you think of like amasar, like you know, like kneading.
Mm-hmm.
Massage. I always thought was interesting where you amasa the dough and then you amasa la masa. You knead the dough. That's kind of interesting. Massage.
Yeah, so that would probably have some kind of Latin root to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any slang that you've picked up where you're living now in New York that you found interesting?
Any slang that I've picked up? Well, I have incorporated now because I've made, I made friends with a lot of international students, a fair amount of whom are actually from India and Pakistan. And Urdu and Hindi are evident. I did not know this until recently, but they're very, very similar in many ways. There are differences, but they're very, very similar, more similar, say, than Portuguese and Spanish. So there are some differences, but so a person from India who speaks Hindi can have a completely fluent conversation with a person from Pakistan who speaks Urdu, and there might be just like a couple, you know, miscommunications, which I thought was really interesting. But yeah, I've incorporated some of their chalo means let's go in those languages. So if you're ever talking to a person who speaks Hindi or Urdu and you want to say let's go, you can say chalo.
There you go.
I thought that was interesting.
I'm thinking of something that when I was playing cricket with my Indian and Pakistani friends, they would shabba shabba, or I think it was shabba shabba. I can't remember exactly which means like come on, vamos. It means let's go good or something.
Let's go. Yeah.
Something like that. I can't remember exactly. But they will know exactly what I'm talking about. What does the wicketkeeper always say when he's standing behind the stumps?
I'll ask.
Yeah. And I can remember like in our cricket teams, we would have in Darwin, which was a very multicultural place, we would have people from all walks of life, but especially from South Asia. And so we would have Pakistanis, and then we would have Tamils, and we would have people from India and from all different parts of India. And they would swear at each other. We would have no idea what it was that they were saying to each other. And then we would have to ask, well, what are they saying to each other? And they say, oh, it's pretty horrible.
It's pretty vulgar.
That's why they're not saying it in English. So, so it was always interesting hearing these things. And where you pick this language up, where you're living in Harlem, is that
at the edge of Harlem? Yeah, mm-hmm. The westernmost edge of Harlem. Yeah.
So this area has probably actually given the world. Not just American English, but given the world a lot of slang over the last 100 years.
Yeah, sure.
What are some of the jazz
slang? What are some? Let me let's play it by ear, for example, is probably I'd have to imagine. You know, that let's play it by ear, let's improvise, right? You'd say to someone, the bee's knees.
Bee's knees. Hip.
Hip, yeah, of course. A cat. Patio, those kind of terms that maybe aren't so used anymore, but they'd have their origins here. Java? No, but Java doesn't have Java's origins here.
Jive.
Jive, yeah. It's a good one.
So a lot of music.
Smoking,
yeah. Hot, cool, yeah. Daddy.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
all of this slang that we would associate with music and dance that came into the world. It started in your area that you live in now. And 100 years ago, that we were speaking about this before the show, but 100 years ago, this was probably a little bit different to what's happening now in this area. What are you observing working and, yeah. and living there at the moment?
So Harlem is definitely being gentrified. The signs are pretty clear, right? You see the little shot. Harlem is a majority Black neighborhood, right? For anyone who isn't familiar with that area, it's a historically Black area. And there's a decent sized Hispanic population as well. But it is, you see the hip little coffee shops and the hip little cafes that appear to have only or mostly white patrons. White patrons who appear to be upper class, you know, have some money. The whole vibe is, you know, of money. It looks of money. Generally the price you're doing, that's, you know, that's one of the first signs that the neighborhood is changing. What's interesting, Austin is well into the throes of gentrification to a point where it's actually a lot of these neighborhoods, there's a study that came out a couple years ago, a lot of these neighborhoods are going to become extinct. Like the people who live there for generations, Black and brown families are no longer going to be living in those.
Yeah. So where you lived in Austin before you live.
Yeah. Before I came here. Right. But here in Harlem, the thing about New York is a lot of these areas, there's also a lot of public housing, right? So public housing developments known colloquially as projects, because they're housing projects. And housing projects are usually rent assisted living, right? So you pay a percentage of your monthly income, and then the government, you know, covers the rest of whatever is necessary. And so these are associated in the popular knowledge with crime and drug use and different things. And certainly these neighborhoods have problems. They're not as, I think, as attractive to white investment, right? And you can't just tear down a housing project, right? You can't just come and say, I'm going to tear down this city-owned housing project and build something else. That's not how it works, right? These are massive, massive undertakings. And there's a lot of power. There's a lot of political maneuvering related to public housing in New York City. So I think that maybe, is might stave off, you know, some of it. But certainly, yeah, from what I've seen and from what I've heard talking to people too, it's hip. Right? It's become hip. It's become something to, you know, people want to live in Harlem, which, you know, maybe 20 years ago, nobody wanted to live in Harlem except for the people who lived in Harlem, right? But now different type of people want to. So we'll see what happens. You know, have to see what happens 20 years from now.
And then next door you have, well, what we would have once called the Boondocks, probably. I'm not sure if that's an expression that you're familiar with.
If I hear the Boondocks, I think out in the sticks, far from an urban center.
Yeah. So Boondocks is more like an impoverished area.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I think it actually has different meanings in different parts of the world. I think actually in some parts of the world, it actually might mean out in the middle of nowhere.
Mm.
But in terms of Australian slang, I'm pretty sure it means an impoverished area.
Interesting.
Yeah. Whereas in the United States, it might mean isolated, but where you live next to Harlem, you have the Bronx. And that is a little bit different to Harlem. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the South Bronx, you can if you just go up a little bit north from where I am, you can cross a bridge and you're in the Bronx. And yeah, so the Bronx in general, and the South Bronx in particular, is the area that I'm most familiar with, that I've been working in. And again, vast majority Black and Hispanic. A lot of immigrants, so a lot of Dominicans, a lot of Hondurans, a lot of Haitians, so a lot of Black Latinos as well. So this is, it's really an interesting sort of mixture of cultures. I was telling you, Glenn, before that, you know, you can walk around for a couple hours in certain areas of the South Bronx and never see a white person, like never, except unless maybe it's a policeman or a fireman or something, but like no one in the neighborhood who lives there is a white person. And I think the thing, and I haven't seen as many signs of gentrification in that area. I'm sure, you know, I mean, with time, as you know, just property becomes more valuable. I doubt it will be spared forever and definitely, but excuse me. But I think, again, there's that notion of perception, right? Like Harlem is hip, right? Harlem has the Apollo Theater. Harlem is where James Baldwin, you know, is writing. Harlem is where jazz clubs, you know, were a big deal and still are.
The beatniks and
Exactly, right? So there's that air of hipness to it, whereas I think in, again, in just a popular like perception of the South Bronx is that this is a place where there's a lot of crime, there's a lot of drug use, and there's a lot of problems, like serious structural problems, which is not an untrue statement, right? Like there, the South Bronx is the part of New York City with the highest rates of like shootings, the highest rates of poverty, the lowest median incomes, right, of any area in New York City. So, I mean, these are real issues. Lots of drug use, lots of, you know, drug use in the street, but they're also, I mean, but I just want to make it clear, like they're also, it's also a really rich, vibrant cultural area, right? And there's a lot of communities that live there and support each other and do incredible things and incredible work and create art and everything. But that perception, I think, and again, the prevalence of housing projects in the South Bronx, you'll go, you know, you'll walk 10 blocks and every block there's a housing project, right? And again, you can't just tear those down. You can't just come in as a developer and say, hey, I'm going to buy this up. And like, that's not how it works. So I think that those areas, I haven't seen as many, you know, I haven't seen those telltale little signs of like the hip cafes or the, you know, and once you're deep in the South Bronx, I just feel like that's not where folks who want to invest in those kinds of projects are looking to invest.
So, no, I would yeah. just have to correct myself there, because I was wrong. It's the first thing that's nothing can possibly go wrong. that's the first thing that's ever gone wrong. So the boondocks in Australia does mean the same thing. It does mean isolated. But I always out the sticks, the back of the blacks. Out beyond the black stump, out whoop whoop, all out these words.
The black stump.
But it does have that connotation of being impoverished.
Yeah, for sure. That's how I think of it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, underdeveloped. I think of like maybe an underdeveloped rural area.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have no idea about the geography of New York or wherever, but like where is the Bronx and where is Harlem compared to sort of like what most people would be familiar with, like the Statue of Liberty and
So the Statue of Liberty is way down, it's more south, but like for example Central Park, right, it's right in the middle of
Manhattan,
which is, you know, the main central where all, you know, the money is and all the tourists come. That's Midtown, right? And that's like the Empire State Building is around there. A lot of different sites to see. The 9/11 memorial is like roughly in that part of town. And then you go up, you go north, and, you know, maybe, again, what, 30 blocks, 40 blocks north of Central Park is where you're, like, in Harlem, and then you keep going up north, and you're in Washington Heights, you know, from the, if anyone saw the movie In the Heights, again, a very, like, mostly Dominican neighborhood, Dominican and Puerto Rican. And you go up, there's little, I think there's actually another neighborhood that's, like, Little Dominican Republic, that's how it's known, it's just separate. I may be mixing terms here. But yeah, once you're up a little bit north, like in Harlem, Washington Heights, if you go east, if you go west, you hit the Hudson River, and on the other side of that is New Jersey. You're no longer in New York. But if you go east, then you can cross a bridge, and you're in the Bronx, which is a big, sprawling borough. Doesn't get as much tourism, obviously, but a lot of people live there. A lot of people.
But it sounds like it is isolated, though. It's kind of like isolated pocket.
Yeah. You got to cross a bridge to get into Manhattan, but you got to cross a bridge to get into Brooklyn too. I mean, it's, you know, they're all little islands essentially. But it is, I mean, it's not the center, it's not the like economic center of New York for sure. No. And it's not where, you know, money is necessarily flowing to, right? That's all happening in Manhattan and in Brooklyn. Brooklyn has the vibe now of, are you getting this?
No. I'm...
Oh, yeah, sorry. Brooklyn has the vibe now of like being a hip, you know, spot. And there are communities there, Jewish communities, Asian communities in Brooklyn that have been there for a long time, that are now suffering some of those same issues of gentrification as well. But the Bronx, hey man, as long as just stay dangerous, Bronx, stay dangerous in the public perception.
Stay authentic.
And the white people will stay away.
Maybe we might come and play stickball in the, do they play stickball in the Bronx or in Harlem?
Where, they do, they do in the Bronx. I think Harlem as well, but they definitely play in the Bronx. Yeah, okay. There is the Bronx.
Yeah. There you go. You might encourage your Indian friends to go and play stickball. They'd probably be very, good at
maybe.
It.
Maybe, yeah.
After playing cricket all their life. So we're both Simpsons fans. So in my brain, a lot of my geography is sort of connected to different Simpsons episodes. So how far away are you from Steamed Hams?
That's upstate, right? It's an Albany expression.
Yeah. It's an Albany expression.
that's the state capital, right? So that's where all the legislature happens. This is at the bottom of New York, and there's actually a big divide politically, or not that, but there is a divide politically, as happens in most parts of this country and probably all over the world, where upstate New York is a consistently Democratic like state, right? Because of New York City, because upstate New York is Trump country.
There is a reason why I asked you this question, because we do have a city, well, in my state, with the same spelling as that place in upstate New York,
Albany.
Do you know how we pronounce that?
How? Not the same way.
We pronounce it different to Giuseppe's. How do we pronounce it? Guess. Try it.
Albany?
Perfect. There it is. Well done.
You monsters.
Albany. So in the south of Western Australia, we have a city called, a small city called Albany. Mm. Yeah. There you go. Well done. 100%.
Your history's greatest monster, Glenn.
Malaise forever. So I think you know your experiences training as a radio journalist, is that what you're specializing in?
I was working in radio journalism in Austin, but I'm specializing now in the documentary film stuff. So
in documentary journalism,
learn some new skills. Yeah, learn some new technical skills, and learn how to do this work in a different way, in a different medium, right? Really, just hope to be employable at some point.
I'm more interested in sort of knowing, like, in terms of your personal journey, how your language ability and learning languages, especially your ability to have a high level of Spanish, has helped you in this direction.
It would be I cannot understate this enough, you know, the importance of learning, even if it's just one language. And I wish I knew, you know, more. I wish I could speak others as well. It would be impossible for me to, what's the term I'm looking for? To adequately, competently report in the South Bronx without speaking Spanish. It would be impossible. It would not be something that I could do, because these communities are so prevalent, right? So many people who are immigrants, or, you know, if they're not immigrants, they live in these ethnic enclaves, right, where everybody speaks Spanish. Spanish is the language you hear most on the street, like in these areas. And I was, you know, we were talking about this a little bit earlier before the episode. People generally, when it's a tight-knit community, people sense who outsiders are, right? Even if you're trying to blend in, even if you're not trying to call attention to yourself, even if you're, you know, people can sense an outsider. And when you're reporting, inevitably you have to walk up to people, right, that don't know you. And so there's that moment where they see you walking up to them, and they wonder, who's this guy? What's he doing? What's he coming for? And when it is with Spanish speakers, I have noticed that the instant I start to speak Spanish to them, the instant I say hello in Spanish and excuse me in Spanish, may give, you know, can I ask you a quick question? You can see there was like a visceral like change in their eyes where a little bit of that distrust starts to fade, right? Like a little, they're like, they suddenly they're like, okay. Even if it's something as simple as going into a restaurant, like yesterday I went to a restaurant and a bunch of Dominicans running the place and they're like, who's this guy? What's he doing here? You know, because it's probably mostly usually just regulars in that place, I would imagine. But you know, you order in Spanish, you sit down, you say thank you in Spanish, you blah, blah, blah in Spanish, can I have this?
And they look at you strangely because you're speaking with an Argentinian accent.
Yeah. Some bizarre accent at this point, probably melded with Mexican like accents, Tex-Mex.
Accent,
yeah. Fairly understandable probably, but they get the good intention at least.
Actually, I was watching Gridiron or American football with one of my friends here once in Buenos Aires. And like in ESPN, they have a Spanish broadcast. And I was asking my friend, like, what accent do these people on ESPN have? And he said, I don't actually know, because it could be from one area, but it doesn't really like sound like they're from this area. And I was like, is it a Miami accent? And I said, yeah, kind of.
Yeah,
like it's like the sort of the Spanish communities in Miami, all these different parts of the United States, and the accents sort of becomes like a mixture of all of these different accents, but not really identifiable from one location.
Right, that's very interesting.
And I think that's sort of what we're observing now with the Spanish speaking communities in the United States and maybe other communities, and I'm sure other communities around the world, is what happened with the Australian accent 200 years ago as well.
Mm.
When you have different immigrant groups coming together at one particular time, the accent and the language does change. And I think this is like as any kind of journalist or someone like yourself doing documentaries or anything like this, representing these people, it's probably an interesting thing to be aware of.
Absolutely.
And
yeah, go ahead.
No. I finished.
No. I mean, I think it kind of helps too, at least because if you're not, if it's clear that you speak the language, but it's not immediately clear where you're from, I think that maybe avoids preconceptions, or it helps you avoid certain preconceptions that someone may have of your, because, you know, I mean, all of these communities live together, they don't always necessarily get along all the time. You know, there are moments of strife, there are moments of squabbles. So yeah, it might be a helpful thing. That is interesting though. Yeah, I wonder how much of that, of the broadcast stuff, is like kind of put on to, you know, like it's kind of like they're doing, you know, like an accent maybe that like, or like altering their voice in a way to make it be more neutral. I don't know.
I think in sort of immigrant communities like this, and I think this is what happened in Australia, is that there was an effort not to appear different, to appear the same as everyone else. So that you wouldn't be treated differently. And this is sort of a social conditioning of being united is one part of that identity, is actually having a language and an accent that is together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is interesting about the helping you avoid preconceptions, because I've certainly noticed that in Argentina. People will obviously know that I'm not from Argentina, but my accent is a little bit different from like the typical gringo accent. Like, so it's obvious that I'm not from the United States. So they'll be like, you're not from here, but you're not from the United States, but I don't know where it is that you are actually from. And I find that different. I probably would get a completely different reaction if I did have like a North American gringo.
The typical, gringo accent. Yeah.
They would probably treat me very differently.
I hate that accent, man.
whereas when we Todo, all of this sort of hula, all of this sort of whereas when I say that I'm from Australia, they have a sort of a bit surprised. I've never spoken to someone from Australia, or it can be completely, completely unusual reactions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
yeah, and it kind of throws them off their guard for a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So in any final tips about culture and language that you would like to
impart? I do actually. I want to share a quick anecdote. One last anecdote that I just thought of as we were talking, and just how, how learning another language can enrich your life. And, you know, even if you don't feel, that you've mastered it, you shouldn't be afraid to go out and speak it. Here in New York, most nightlife venues require you to show proof of vaccination to get inside. So that can be your vaccine card, or it can be just a photo of the card. And at the beginning, businesses weren't really following this rule. And then there were some changes in enforcement. So now most businesses do enforce this rule. So one of the first times it was enforced, I was unprepared, and they're asking at the door, and I'm looking for my vaccine card. I can't find it. But the bouncers are two Dominican dudes, right? And so they're standing right there, and I'm standing with a friend. We're ready to get into this bar. And in front of me is a very drunk white fellow with some of his friends, and he's very drunk. And these two Dominican guys start to like kind of make fun of him in Spanish, right? And so I start laughing, and they kind of look at me, and I like make a joke about him, like, how, yeah, he's drunk as hell, man. And then we just kind of laugh or whatever. I get up there and I'm looking for my vaccine card. I can't find it. I'm like, dude, I can't find my vaccine card. And they say, one of them just says, he literally said in Spanish, said, pero no, tú hablas español. Está bien, padre. He said, you speak, which is from a public health standpoint is very problematic. that can't be the standard by which, we enforce our public health policies. But from the me wanting to get into that bar policy that night, it was fantastic. It's like, oh, thanks, man. So something as simple as making fun of a drunken frat boy, to a couple of Dominicans in Spanish. Yeah. So don't be afraid to learn. Don't be afraid to speak. Don't be afraid to make jokes at other people's expense. Sometimes.
Yes, actually politeness goes a long, long way. Like when I first came to Argentina, I noticed like saying thanks, mate, with a big smile was really, really, really helpful.
So
even your attitude, even if it's obvious that you're not going to be speaking perfectly, but if you have a kind, friendly disposition, people are much more likely to respond well to you. And of course, trying another language is one way that you can actually go towards actually sharing something. And when we're learning languages, when we're teaching language, it's really important to share these experiences with each other.
Absolutely.
And so no one is alone out there as a language learner. That's another.
Yeah, of course. Thing to think of course.
Yeah. And so they were probably thinking.
Yeah, anyone.
They were probably thinking, "Oh, how good is it to actually talk to someone, a patron, in Spanish?"
Like, yeah, exactly.
I've been speaking in English all night, and then all of a sudden.
Yeah, a rarity. Yeah,
I think it's just that the effort is generally appreciated, right?
Absolutely. So anyway, it's been a bonza episode.
Indeed. This one.
I hope the people out there have enjoyed it, and you've discovered some gold. In this episode, it's always gold having you on, Evan. An absolute
always pleasure. A pleasure, Glenn. Always a good pleasure. To catch up with you.
And we will see my favorite Seppo. We'll hear from my favorite Seppo again in the future. So, from us here at the Australians Teach English podcast, it's us saying goodbye.
For more information about the Australians Teach English Institute, go to australiansteachenglish.com or follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Australians Teach English.